What came up to write about once again, and now I'm talking about it, is about fear. And one particular level of fear. But before I get to that level, just to mention some other levels of fear. That fear on one level is natural. That from our cave days, where everything was threatening, we needed a certain level of fear in our system to be on alert, to listen, to feel, to sense, to see if anything was a threat, because so many things are threatening. So I think that's still in our system. And then in more modern ways, the fear is still appropriate on the physical level, walking in dark places, working with sharp knives and dangerous tools. So there's that level of fear. But what I don't think we register, and it would be really useful if you sat down and just sat with it sometime, is the fear of people. Everybody, almost everybody I know, carries a fear of people, whether they know it or not. And in this fear of people, they are constantly, automatically, unconsciously monitoring what they say and they do in order not to upset people. So what I was looking at is how rare it is to meet anyone where that fear is not relevant. And I was looking at my life, and there is hardly anybody at all, just one or two people, where there isn't some monitoring going on, checking the possible reactions in another person. And what I was thinking about as an example would be my new, very welcome example is Diane. So if we said to Diane on the phone, "Listen, Diane, we've got something very exciting set up for you tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. And if you come here at 10 o'clock, we're going to present you with this exciting situation." If she came at 10 o'clock and we said, "Oh, we forgot you were coming," nothing would happen in Diane. Nothing would happen. There would be no contraction. There would be no disappointment. There'd be no anger, no resentment, no againstness. Nothing would happen. What would go? She'd go, "Oh," and that would be it. It's all over. Now, most people, all the time, they're on the edge of contraction. Always on the edge of contraction. Unless they hear exactly what they want to hear, exactly the way they want to hear it, contraction goes on the inside. And it's always there. Very, very rarely not there. To some degree. So with most people, most of the time, there's fear. There's fear from what's going to happen on the outside, and there's fear for what they're going to generate to somebody else who is going to react to whatever they say. And so when people like Bruce Lipton and the new level of scientists talk about the fact that we are only conscious 5% of our life, we only act 5% consciously in our life, and 95% is unconscious. That unconscious is our brain continually sending out radar to say, "Is this safe? Is this not safe? Is this person going to like me or not like me? Am I going to upset them? Is there a danger here?" And that's constantly going on the automatic level. And the results of that radar beam coming back, goes back and modifies what the brain says and doesn't say. Somebody was saying on one of the websites, they were saying, "And people don't accept me as I am." What I wrote back is, people don't accept you as you are, for one thing, because you never say who you are. Hardly anybody is ever honest about themselves in each moment. They're always modifying. They're always editing. They're always checking what they're going to say. Now, if they do that consciously, fine, because sometimes it might be appropriate. But the trouble is, it's unconscious. It's always checking about danger, which is not real danger. It's coming from when you're a child and you're helpless and you need grown-up people to take care of you, to feed you, to keep you clean, to house you. You are checking all the time that you don't upset and therefore get abandoned. Now, I know that isn't logical, but that's what's going on all the time. I've got to be careful what I say. And of course, with parents, most parents, that's relevant. Parents are always getting upset. And of course, often it's the child that's evoking that. But still, that energy is in the person all the time. And it looks like survival, because that's what it was at one time. But it's not survival. It's just wanting what the neurosis wants in order to feel as comfortable as it's possible to feel. So it's always checking, always checking. And if you look at your life, you sit down and look at this, you see how many times you get upset during the day. If somebody pushes in front in a line when you're at the checking out counter at the supermarket, or you don't get treated the way you want to be treated, or your partner, or your child, or anything, you will find your system is constantly contracting. And of course, that's the source of the anger and resentment and revenge and all those other nasty things. So if you take a look, you will see that somewhere there is an alert system in there checking all the time, is this safe? And then it modifies what it shares. It doesn't share anything that it thinks is going to bring danger, upset, anger, rejection. What was just asked was, sometimes it's clear to see in others that when something that looks like a tragedy happens, that it's actually for the best for them. But often the person themselves doesn't see the wider situation where it could be good not only for the person that's created the situation, but for also the person that seems to be suffering. We can see other people more clearly than we see ourselves. Now, what this is again about the matrix that's built up in the mind as a child. So from the ages, say, of birth to 7 years old, the brain is being formed, and while it's being formed, it's putting in standards by which to live. That this is safe, this is unsafe. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, this is benefit, this is harm, this is possible, this is impossible. And all that information goes into the brain. Now, in each situation, the brain takes that, whatever's happening on the outside, and refers it to what's the inside to say, is this safe? Is this not safe? Is this okay? Is this not okay? But it's all based on this past conditioning up to the age of, say, 7, based on other people's experience, which is based on other people's experience ad infinitum, by people who are living at a very low level of their potential. They're not living in freedom. They're not clear. And so they actually live in paranoia way back, coming from the caves. That's the source of. And so inside the brain is always, is this safe, is this not safe? Is this good for me, is this not good for me? And it doesn't see a bigger picture. So what it's looking for is safety, security, and predictability. On some level, it wants things to always be safe. They always want to feel secure. And they always want to be able to look ahead so that things can be predictable. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as safety, there's no such thing as security, and there's no such thing as predictability. Everything is changed. Everything, everything, everything. Down to the smallest molecular level, everything is changing all the time. And if we're fixed in some way, if our brain is fixed in some way, it keeps checking, is this lining up with my idea, my conditioning of what's safe? And it very rarely is. So uncertainty is unsafe. So therefore the brain is very unhappy when things don't turn out the way the brain thinks it wants things to turn out. Unfortunately, the brain is so narrow in its consciousness, it doesn't see that if things are safe, are secure, are predictable, it gets bored. It gets bored with its partner, even although the partner could be a wonderful partner, but it's so safe, so secure, so predictable, there's no life in it anymore. There's no uncertainty anymore. It's looking for something that actually is not the best for it. So when something happens, say a partner says they're leaving, it feels as though the life is falling apart. What about this? What about that? What's going to happen about the children? What's going to happen about... what's going to happen? What's going to happen? But the thing is, if that doesn't happen, hardly anybody's life is alive, is juicy, is worth living. And people get bored. And when they get bored, they start picking on each other and picking on things. And they go into a contraction of complaint. And the complaint is, I am not being taken care of the way I deserve to be taken care of. And complaint is a frequency. Complaint is a vibration. And that vibration is a magnet for things to support complaint. So if you are in a frequency of complaint, you will keep drawing to you things about which you feel justified in complaining. Although there is never, ever a justification for complaint. Complaint is irresponsible. Complaint is not seeing the bigger picture. So when you say, I can see other people's situation and what's just happened to them overall is the best for them. It's always more clear to see in other people. When it happens to you, your brain contracts, compares it with that place and says, no. One other thing about that is, when I say part of our brain is looking to be safe and secure and predictable, which is natural, of course. We don't want to keep being disturbed. But as I say, if we're not disturbed, we drop down and get into a flat level of life that isn't natural. I'll tell you why it isn't natural. You see, as I see it, as I mentioned before, if you take this tiny seed from a tree and you put it in the ground, and it's the right soil and the right temperature and the right moisture, it will grow. And often it grows, you cut it down, and from the roots up come more. It has to grow. It has to grow. And we're the same. We don't have a choice. We have to grow. We're born with something that says, You've got to grow. You've got to expand. You've got to keep moving. Everything's moving. Everything's expanding. And if we get out of rhythm in that, and we're trying to be safe and secure and predictable, we're cutting ourselves off from the essential flow of life, both in ourselves and outside of ourselves. So what happens is we're suppressing this energy. And this energy won't be suppressed. It will not be suppressed. It's like that tree, like bamboo. It'll grow through concrete. It'll grow. It's going to grow. And we're going to grow. And if we get into a fixed rhythm of safe and secure and predictable, that energy's got to go somewhere. So it comes up and we get attracted to somebody else. No, safe, secure and predictable, not going there. Something comes up and says, what about this new job? No, I'm safe, I've got a pension coming. No, no, no. Now where does that energy go? It doesn't go anywhere. It goes back. And that energy starts to build up inside. And then it produces something. It creates a tension. It creates a stress. It can't move. It's not natural. So it starts to grow things inside your body. Your body goes out of balance because it's not in the flow. In your flow and not in the flow of life. Just as an example, if you take a look, you'll find that most people say they're unhappy when they've got nothing to look forward to. To look forward to. So most people are hardly ever in this moment. They're hardly ever here. They're looking forward to. But the thing is, nothing ever happens in the future. The future never happens. Whatever happens, happens in this very moment. So often people say things like, oh, well, I just got angry, so I'm going to analyze why I got angry, so that in future, there isn't a future. You don't need that. If you are present in the moment, you don't need all that old information. If you are present in the moment. But just take a look. How often are you only in this moment, only in this moment, for this moment? I'll tell you, virtually never. Never. You're never here. The mind's turning, you're in the mind, the mind's taking the past, projecting it into the future, and you live in a gap. Not here. Not now. So it has to look forward to something to make life worthwhile. If you are here, if you are now, you don't bother to look forward. This moment is so full on so many levels. It's so alive. And you can see that when you go online and you watch somebody, say Anthony DiMello or Jack O'Keefe, you'll see they're full of life. Now, sometimes you go onto a site where somebody's talking about being awake. They're not awake. When somebody's awake, you can feel it. Sometimes they're bubbling out, and sometimes they're very silent, but you can feel it. They're there. They're present. They're now. And you will never upset them. You will never upset them. No matter what you say, what you do, they will not be upset because they are so not there, they're totally there. So there's nobody to upset. Everything is perfect. Oh, so this is happening. Oh, so that's how you feel. Oh, so that's what you think. Oh, so that's what you want to do. Your partner, I'm leaving you. Oh, so that's what you want to do. If you're intelligent, you'll say, Does that have anything to do with me, the way I've been treating you? Haven't I been present enough? Haven't I been loving enough? But it doesn't really matter, because this is what you want to do. Wonderful. Not only is it wonderful, but you're having the courage to live your truth. Wonderful. Happiness to you, and happiness to this lucky person. That's going to get your endorphins, your aliveness, your chemicals of love in this moment. And may it never die.